Wow, I was thinking maybe we'd just have a singing service this morning, right? But we wouldn't get to hear the young men who are going to be sharing some thoughts with us in just a minute. It is, it's just great to be here. Every time we travel, go different places, I am always struck with how much we miss this place and how much we love you and how much I love this church. And I am thankful to be a part of the Northeast Church of Christ and grateful for this body of believers. And for those of you who are our guests this morning, whether you're joining us online, whether you're here for the first time, have a big youth group from Tennessee with us this morning. It's great to have them with us. I think Cedric will say a little bit more about them at the close. But just happy that you're here. We're trying to be a church that loves God more deeply, that is growing deeper in our faith, our knowledge of Jesus. And we want to be a church that shares the good news of Jesus by the things that we say and the things that we do. Speaking of which, there will be a few of us that will be scooting out a little early after worship this morning. If I don't stay out here a little bit longer than I usually do, there's several of us going down to Kumo, the inner city ministry that we work in concert with, and we look forward to that. We are grateful for our volunteers in all kinds of areas, including those who speak when I am not here. Rick, thank you for what you did last week. While Rick was preaching and did a great job, saw that online, we welcomed Judah into the world, our seventh grandchild. And okay, I'm partial, I admit it. And it's gratuitous. All grandparents think their grandkids are the cutest, most wonderful things in the world, and I am no exception. But I will tell you this. Let me give you a word of warning. If you're going to announce the birth of your seventh grandchild online on Facebook, make sure you get his name right. Okay, so this week, I just had to share this with you because I am sometimes such a dolt. Got a text from my daughter-in-law, Keela, and she just simply says, his middle name is Thomas. And she has laughing and crying and tears, a little emoji there. And then I realized I gotten his middle name wrong and posted it on Facebook. And Jeannie says, oh my goodness, Jeannie was included in the thread. He should have run that by me first. I would have corrected him. And then Keela ha ha ha's and I ha ha ha. And I said, oh, good grief, we'll fix. And then I said, fixed, I'm an idiot, sorry. And then she said, no worries. So I can tell you right now, with complete confidence, that I know all of my grandchildren's first names, okay? And maybe about half of their middle names, okay? So I think that's pretty good. Anyway, thank you, Rick, for preaching, talking about Judah, talking about new life and the next generation, and where we are as a church and where we're going as a church, and what we're doing in terms of encouraging our young people, being an important part of the church. I was having a conversation with a minister from another church in another state sometime over the last couple of weeks, and he had mentioned to me lamenting the fact that the church had gotten older where he was. And not that there's anything wrong with being old. I would put myself in that category right now. It's okay to be older. But it's important that those who are younger, the younger generation, develops a faith, a living faith, personal faith in God. And while we see statistics about 50% of our young people after they leave high school drifting back into the world and not being involved in church, I am encouraged by what is going on here, and I am excited about what we can do in terms of sharing our faith with the next generation. In Psalm 78, it says, he commanded our ancestors to teach their children so that the next generation would know them, to know God's laws, his ways, his precepts. Even the children yet to be born And they in turn will tell their children, then they would put their trust in God. And so what we are about today isn't just about us and just isn't about the here and now. It's about even those children yet to be born and us sharing and demonstrating faith with them and us being the kind of church that highlights that and encourage our children to develop their own faith. I want to say, before we introduce our speakers this morning, I just want to say thank you to all of you who participate or are involved in our youth program. Want to thank Nick Hutchins, the fantastic job that he does. Can't say enough good things about Nick. He does things week in, week out, not only with our young people and kid men and the youth group, but he has been instrumental in a lot of the good things going on here for years. I'm thankful to them. The Wyatts and the Dixons, what they are doing with Kidmen. Those of you who were here Friday night and yesterday for our VBS, the Bible Club for the kids, appreciate what you do, how you volunteer, what you do. Peter and Paige Okada, right now some of our kids are down the hallway here in children's worship. They organize that. We have volunteers who do that. And I think of all of our teachers through the year, and I thought about just asking y'all real quick, how many of you have taught children sometime in your lifetime, whether here or somewhere else, okay? Raise your hand. I want you to raise them high. I want you to look around and see all of the investment in this auditorium in the lives of our young people. And there are ways that you can continue to be involved. Talk to Nick. Talk to those who are in charge of our youth program. And find out ways that you can be involved more and more in that. So maybe you've heard at times some people say young people are the future of the church. But I say the future is now. And as I look at these little children up here who've recited their Bible verses that they had in class, we've seen what others are doing. I think of Corey Crabb right now in Denver. As most of you know, he's going through some real health challenges right now. But he faced those challenges in a place where he had made a decision to reach out to the homeless teenagers in the Denver area and was doing work there right now. One of our young men, Matthew Edwards, is in Baja, Mexico, with a part of a mission team with Andy and some others, reaching out not only to all ages there, but reaching out to young people in Mexico. I think of Noah Jordan and Avery, who are going to be beginning a new life together, beginning next month, well, month after next, in August. They went to Harding together. They were part of the youth group here. They're getting married. He's going to be a youth minister down there. I'm just excited about what so many of our young people are doing. And it's not just about what they're going to be doing in the future, but it's about what they can do right now in serving in the kingdom. And so, getting back to the scripture, that's kind of our theme scripture for today. Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for everyone, for the old and young alike, so that everyone may see your progress. So part of what we're doing this morning is allowing you a chance to see just a snippet of some of the progress of our young people and how proud we are of them. And we have three speakers who are going to share some thoughts today with us. Their names are right here. Andrew Headley's going to start, and then Caleb, and then Josiah. Interestingly enough, they're all talking about people who are called into ministry and service in God's work at a young age. And I'm kind of happy that Josiah is going to be able to talk about Josiah. King Josiah. It's a perfect fit. But all of them, they're going to be talking about how God was able to use young people in a very influential way in their work, in their ministry, in his call in their lives. So without further ado, we're going to call Andrew up here. And then Caleb's going to follow, and then Josiah. And so welcome them. We are happy for y'all. And they're all students, all college students. Well, no, two of them are college students at Harding. You're going to, Josiah, where are you going again?
Doing St. Clair right now.
St. Clair right now. And none of these, not one of these three young men are going into full-time ministry, as far as I know. That's not their plan. But they have put a lot of work and effort into their talks today. We met, talked a little bit, but a lot of this, they've just done it on their own, and we are so proud of you. So let's go ahead and get started. Andrew, I'll call you up here. You ready?
Good morning, church. So good to see so many of you guys out here today. So, like Grady said, we're continuing this theme that we've got going on of young people in the church. And so he has me speaking about Jeremiah today. Now, Jeremiah was a prophet. You can read about him in the New Testament, Old Testament, sorry. Jeremiah was called in 627 BC. This was before Judah had been taken over and conquered by the Babylonians, but he had to sit and end up watching all of Judah get taken over and Jerusalem get conquered. So he was called in 627 BC, and like any 15 to 20-year-old, he had two excuses for God as to why he could not be a prophet. So his first excuse was that, obviously, that you've probably heard a lot, is that I'm too young. He was single, unmarried, and he had all of his life ahead of him. And God came to him and said, Jeremiah, I will be with you. It's going to be okay. And he said, but God, I don't know how to speak. And God was like, you know what? I'll put the words in your mouth for you. You just have to say them. And finally he gave in. And he soon became known as the weeping prophet because of the different things that God had called him to say. A lot of the people didn't like, and nobody ended up listening to him. So some of the things, there's a whole laundry list, it's a really long book, but some of the things that he talked about were idolatry, which is a very common theme with our prophets in the Old Testament. He talked about false prophets at the time. A lot of the false prophets were telling all the people that things were okay, and all of the sins and the unfaithfulness to God was okay. That they could just keep continuing and prospering, whereas Jeremiah was not as kind to them as the false prophets were. He also talked about the incoming destruction of Babylon, saying, if you guys don't change your ways, then bad things are going to happen, and you guys are going to be taken over. And towards the end of that, as the Babylonians came closer to conquering them, he started telling them what God was talking about as promises of a remnant. So the remnant being the people that are going to make it out of exile and continue the church after exile. So, you know, when you're preaching such awesome messages, you're bound to make a lot of friends. So he faced a lot of intense persecution, which is one of those reasons that he was called the weeping prophet. Some of the notable ones that I found was he was thrown in a cistern. Just thought that was a little out there. He was imprisoned, like a lot of the prophets were, that were preaching things that they didn't like. I think the worst thing that he had to endure, though, was watching Jerusalem and all of Judah walk into the fate that he knew was coming and he could do nothing to stop. So some of the lessons that we can learn, and I don't have much time, so we're kind of cutting straight into the lessons. A few of the things that we can learn from that little bit that we talked about Jeremiah is that the Lord is always going to compliment us where we have weaknesses. Where Jeremiah was too young, God said, don't worry, I'm going to be with you. And that plays into the theme that if you're young and you want to do something, but you feel like you can't, God's going to be with you. He's going to give you the wisdom that you need. He's got a plan for you, and he's going to give you everything that you need to follow through with that plan. The second thing, and there's only three, I promise. The second one is sometimes when we do what God tells us and we say what God tells us to do, we're not going to make a whole lot of friends. Especially out in the real world that we live in, you know, if you choose to not make the decisions that other people are, whether that's going and getting plastered one night or going and doing things that you shouldn't do to honor God, we're not always going to make friends. And that's not just with the non-Christians. We're going to probably not make friends within the church family. There Obviously, whenever we're preaching what we think God has put us on our hearts, there needs to be a deal of gentleness that comes with that and understanding. But a lot of people are not going to want to hear what God has to say. The last thing that I want to say, and I'm going to follow it with a little illustration, is that you're not always going to be successful in earthly standards. By all counts, Jeremiah was a total failure. Not a single person listened to him, and Judah fell because nobody would listen to him, and he had to watch the whole thing. Now, when I was a freshman in high school, I was playing for the high school baseball team, and I found myself walking up to the plate at the bottom of the last inning, tie game, two outs, and bases loaded. Now, if any of you guys know baseball, this is a very, very rare chance to hit a walk-off grand slam. Now, many of you are looking at me, and are like, yeah, right. But this was my dream since when I was little, and all baseball players dream, to hit a walk-off grand slam. And I'm walking up to the plate, and if I'm being honest with you guys, my tail was in between my legs. I was terrified. Now, I get up there, and though I was scared, I knew this was the magic. This was my chance. And yeah, I was small, okay? I hit like two doubles my whole high school career, but hear me out. I had dreamed of this moment since I was little. And I walk up to that plate, and I look at my third base coach, and he's giving me all the signs, you know, how they give you signs, and they tell you what to do. And sure enough, this man gives me the bunt sign. I couldn't believe it. So I walk back, and I get back in the batter's plate, the batter's box, and I watch the first pitch go by, hoping that maybe if I didn't bunt the first one, he'd change his mind. And he gives me the bunt sign a little more insistently this time. So the next pitch comes in, I bunt it down the first baseline. I'm safe at first, the winning run scores, and the next thing I know, I'm getting mobbed by 20 sweaty of my best friends and getting wet with this sunflower seed Gatorade sludge. And I couldn't help but think that is not how I thought that was going to turn out. And thinking about Jeremiah, when he was called, had no idea that he was going to end up being called the weeping prophet. He had no idea that he was going to have to watch Judah fall to the Babylonians despite all of his warnings. He had no idea that he was going to face such intense persecution when God called him. Like I said, he was the definition of failure. But here we are talking about him on a Sunday morning. God has different standards for success than we do. And we as humans have to accept the fact, and we as Christians have to accept the fact that we are not always going to live up to earthly expectations. We might not get 100 converts. We might not get one convert in our life. But if we stay faithful to God, then we are, by all counts, successful in our faith.
All right, sweet. So I recently had the opportunity to serve as a camp counselor at Uplift. Our youth group does Impact, which is Lipscomb's version of Uplift. But it's at Harding University, just a summer camp. Here's me, as before, all the sleep deprivation, dealing with a bunch of young kids on your hall. And when I was driving there, and I was like, what have I gotten myself into? Like, I don't know anything about this program. I've never been. I don't know anybody there. And once I got there, the first meeting we had, it was literally called on the agenda, what have I gotten myself into? And I was like, and as they were talking, I was like, I am not qualified for this. Like, I don't know anything about how to handle kids that come from broken homes or anything like that. I don't know how to do that. But something that stuck with me throughout the entire 2 weeks I was there is that God does not call the qualified, he qualifies the called. And that really stuck with me. And I think when I was there, I learned very quickly that setting a good example meant a very big deal to these kids, even just being there and trying the best I could. And I messed up several times, and I was not the best I could have been, but I certainly tried. And I think this sums up the story of Timothy very well. His whole goal was to set a good example in Ephesus. And that was very important to him because that made the people that were, there was false teachers in Ephesus. And that was very important for him to set a good example. So just a little bit of background on Timothy. His father did not believe. So some of the lessons that he couldn't learn as a child were able to be held against him by his opponents, the false teachers in Ephesus. But he didn't learn from his mother and grandmother. And Paul mentions them by name, which I think is super important and very cool. And Paul recruited him because he also understood Jewish and Greek culture very well, which rounded out a part that Paul couldn't really reach very well. And that shows that your background allows you to reach people that maybe you didn't even think you could. Timothy had very good standing with the local Christians and his around him. And Paul recognized that potential and took him and became his mentor and took him with him on his missionary journey. His good reputation reflected his good character and his potential to preach. And something else about Timothy, that he was very young, just like Jeremiah was. Estimates put him within his late teens or early 20s when he left with Paul, which is about the age that I'm at. And I can't even imagine leaving with some guy I just met, you know, not more than a year ago or anything like that. And if I was leaving with Paul, the first thing on my mind would be, would people even take me seriously? Like, Paul is an accomplished preacher who's going on his third missionary journey setting up churches. Would people take me seriously just because I'm half his age? And this brings us back to our scripture today, 1 Timothy 4:12. Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young. Set an example for the believers in speech and conduct and love and faith and in purity. So what did Timothy do? He served with Paul for around 7 years before he was sent on his first solo adventure in Corinth. That was brief compared to his time in Ephesus. After reuniting, they traveled to Ephesus, where Paul continued onward and left Timothy behind all by himself. That would be terrifying. You're expected to deal with the false teachers that were all around in Ephesus. And that's an extreme vote of confidence in my mind that Paul would leave him there. False teachers wanted to pull away the church and teach their version of Jesus. And that was a very big issue in Ephesus. Their doctrine was being challenged, and the right Jesus was not being preached, but a false one. And being trusted, that's very strong character, I think, of Timothy. And Paul calls for Timothy to flee the evil desires of youth and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart, which is 2 Timothy 2:22. And also, Timothy, guard what has been entrusted to your care. Turn away from godless chatter and the opposing ideas of what is falsely called knowledge. That's 1 Timothy 6:20. Can you move the slide one? Nice, thank you. So Timothy's main goal was to avoid unnecessary disagreement whenever possible. Paul had Timothy circumcised right before he left on his missionary journey. And that wasn't because it was an issue of salvation. It was so that he could reach the people that believed it was, and that he'd be able to preach to him better. And that's also following. Timothy was willing to accommodate the preferences of others without compromising doctrine, and that just follows through his entire time in Ephesus, because it's very important not to worry about the things that don't really matter and to teach the version of Jesus that actually does. And I think Timothy really did that well. Timothy had a very close relationship to Paul. He was Timothy's mentor, and Paul calls him his son multiple times in both 1 and 2 Timothy. It's a very good example of the older generation passing on to the new generation. But difficulty came when Paul was in chains in Rome. Paul was facing his imminent death, but he still found the time to write to Timothy and give him encouragement. And that's very important. because Paul understood that investing in the next generation was very important. Needed constant reassurance and encouragement. If that was true and that set Timothy apart, I am not doing good. And I think you guys aren't either. It's very important for us to all to receive encouragement and reassurance. And that's why God created the church, so that we could build each other up. And Paul writes 1 and 2 Timothy to give instructions to Timothy, but also to remind him that Paul is praying for him day and night. And I think Timothy needed that, because he is all alone, as I said. So what can we learn? God gives skills to Timothy. When Timothy left, he was not that skilled. Like, he had good reputation among the local Christians, but was he ready to go on a multi-legged missionary journey? I don't think so. But that's okay, because as he traveled with Paul, he learned more from his mistakes, from his mentor. It didn't happen overnight. It took time. And I think that's important to remember today. As I said earlier, God does not call the qualified, he qualifies the called. I think that's a very important thing, because you cannot expect to have the skills that you need. Rather, it's over time you learn them. There are many that oppose his ministry. And I think if you're hoping to teach Jesus without opposition, I think you're crazy, because Jesus is directly a controversial figure. He goes against the world. And so it's important that when you face that opposition, that you continue onward and you don't let it get to you. And as I said, when Paul was in chains, Timothy continued on, even though that would mess with my head, that my mentor, the person I looked up to, was about to be killed in Rome. But Timothy didn't let it get to him, and he kept doing what was necessary of him. So Timothy, his main goal is to be a good example to show others Christ, and I believe that's ageless. For all the young people, no matter if you're young, if you're old, if you set a good example, you reach more people than you realize. Because by doing that, you're showing others Christ. It's important to learn from a mentor. So young people, listen to your elders. And older people, I think it's very important to invest in the younger generation. I'm very glad that we've been given this opportunity to do this today, because at least I've learned a lot already. So sometimes the things that you do that seem small might have a bigger impact than you realize. And I think that's important to remember. So the thought I'm going to leave you guys with today is your life a good example? And are you reaching the people and showing people that, are you showing people Christ through your actions and through who you are as a person? Thank you.
Morning, church. You know, I had a different idea when I was coming up here when Grady told me I get to talk about myself. I started thinking about like a biblical resume. I was like, man, what all have I done? Who all have I tried to save or talk to? And then I'm like, oh, he's talking about King Josiah. So thanks, Grady. Now, today I'm going to be talking about Josiah, and if you don't know much of anything about him or his biblical or faith walk, one of the biggest things you might be able to take away is that he became king when he was 8 years old. 8 years old is pretty young. I remember when I was 8 years old, or my brothers were 8 years old. By all means, would I not want them in charge of my household? Josiah was the son of Amon, who was king before him, and his father did much evil in the eyes of the Lord. So did most or all of the kings of Judah that came before him. They all rose and resurrected idols, and even because of certain things like that, the way that Josiah became king was that his father Amon had been assassinated by his own officials that had taken him out of his place of reign. And that left with a little young 8-year-old boy, Josiah. And, you know, when I became 8 years old, because I was raised in a Christian family and stuff, and my name was biblically made, my mom had the idea, and I kind of had the idea, what if my 8-year-old birthday party was like a king birthday party? And so that's what I did. I went into my classroom of like my grade, and I got all these letters and stuff. I felt like it was like a royal invitation to everyone that got to come to my birthday party. And I was putting them in all the little folders and sections. And all of a sudden, I had everyone come to this party, and I had this elegant purple robe and this crown, and I got to have the cute girl in my class be like the queen and stuff, so that was really cool. I got to have this giant feast of food that I got to pick, because no food that I didn't want to eat was going to be at my birthday party. No way. But thinking in retrospect to even then and thinking about that now, I mean, I couldn't imagine being in such a place of power, let alone having no father or something to kind of guide you. And that was one of the overwhelming things. I mean, he's 8 years old. He has this lack of this influence or this godly driven drive by a parent or even officials by him, because this kingdom and all of Judah had been consumed with so much evil that there was nobody to positively influence or lead him to God. But yet, already early by the age of 16, he was seeking God by himself in his lonesome. And at age 20, he began to cleanse Judah and tear down the idols that had been in this kingdom, that had been reigning over all these people for so long. And Josiah, in the ways of him serving and blessing other people, I mean, he celebrated God. He loved God, and he celebrated by sharing the book of the law. One of the officials, Hilkiah, found the book of the law in the temple of the Lord while in repair. And once Josiah heard this and he found it, he ripped and tore his robes. That's how like in his emotions and how like sad and in sorrow he was about finding this truth of God that was so close to them that had been lost for so long. In 2 Kings 23, verse 13, "Go and inquire of the Lord for me and for the people, for all of Judah, what is written in this book that has been found. Great is the Lord's anger that burns against us because those things have gone before us have not been obeyed, the words of his book. They have not acted in accordance with all that is written there concerning us." He later went on, and it was said that in chapter 23, verses 1 through 3, "Then the king called together all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem. He went up to the temple of the Lord with the people of Judah, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the priests and the prophets, all the people from the least to the greatest. He read in their hearing all the words of the book of the covenant, which had been found in the temple of the Lord. The king stood by the pillar and renewed the covenant in the presence of the Lord to follow the Lord and keep his commands, statutes, and decrees with all his heart and with all his soul, thus confirming the words of the covenant written in the book. Then all the people pledged themselves to the covenant." And I mean, that last verse, that all of them pledged themselves to that. I mean, Josiah must have had such conviction and love and understanding and a guide and a path for following God when all these kings had reigned for so long, all of these falsehoods, all these false idols. Yet in this conviction, in this moment of reading the book of the law, of the covenant, that all these people were so convicted, not just by Josiah, but by what he had been blessed with to be able to share with the people. But some of his biggest challenges was his age, obviously, of the age of 8, but not even just that, having no influence. I mean, having to seek God for yourself. I mean, I can't even imagine, but even in today's world and stuff, like, that's hard. That's really difficult to try and seek God from your own understanding. I mean, imagine living somewhere where there's not Bibles everywhere, you're not finding Christians at different places or having churches fully dedicated to worshiping God, but you have all these falsehoods being represented in this world, but yet out of all of that, Josiah finds God, and he seeks him. In chapter 22, verse 2, "He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord and followed completely the ways of his father David, not turning aside to the right or the left." I mean, that makes me think of 3 John 1:4. "I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth." And I'm just trying to think about how God felt after all this time, after all these years, that Josiah came out here and did not steer to the left or the right, but committed himself to reintroducing this entire nation, this entire tribe of the people of Judah back into God and his love. And that brings me to the point that just as Josiah shared the good word, that we should strive to do the same, inviting God in every part of our lives, that we still have the influence to introduce other people to the Lord. Just because he's not so hidden away for us doesn't mean that he's not hidden away for other people. There are so many people out there lost, just like him or more, that have never heard the good word. And it doesn't matter whether you're young or you're old, but Josiah has introduced this fact that you can do this no matter what part of your life you're in, no matter what place you come from, whether you're born into God or not, through your family and through the way you're raised, that you can always find him and seek him, because he will always be coming and trying to seek after you. Thank you.
Preach it. Preach it. Y'all did a absolutely wonderful job. Thank you for your encouragement. And, I told them when we were putting this together, I said, keep your talk like 5 to 8 minutes. I said, now, I'm probably not the right person to be telling you this. I said, because my name is always speaks 5 minutes too long. That's my nickname. But length of time doesn't matter here. I just am so grateful that we have a church, not just with these kind of young men, but all the young men and ladies, boys and girls, who make such an important part of this church. There's a verse in Ecclesiastes that says, remember your creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. And so basically that's a way of saying, as you grow older, sometimes challenges get tougher. We grow old. We face difficulties and challenges, and maybe things aren't as great for us physically as they were when we were young. But I believe whether you're old or young, whatever age you are, you can always be made new in Jesus right now. Right? Right now, this moment. So wherever you are in your relationship with God, whether you're 80 or 90 years old or whether you're younger, God can take you where you are and give you a new life every moment of every day in Jesus. And so we just want to remind you that if you need any help, encouragement, assistance, if we can partner with you in any way on that journey, whether it's to make a commitment to the Lord and be baptized into him, if you want to explore what it means to be an active part of this church and want to explore that more deeply, please let us know. We want to be here for you, and we want to be everything that Jesus is calling us to be. And thank you to these three young men and everybody else who was up here this morning to remind us of that fact. Thank you guys so much. So we're going to sing again. Let us know. I think we're singing again, right? All right. Let's sing again.